This is a Federal News Network podcast.
Welcome to For Your Benefit, presented by NITP, the federal leader in retirement planning seminars sponsored by WEPA. Join NITP for an hour of plain talk on planning your future. You've got questions, they've got answers.
Good morning and welcome to the January 20th, 2020 For Your Benefit radio show. We're here today to celebrate Dr. Martin Luther King's achievements and birthday. And to help us with that, and also some financial information as well, Joel Kundick. Joel is a certified financial planner, fellow seminar presenter, all-around good guy, and I understand good father and a travel companion.
Thanks, Bob. Yeah, glad to be here.
All right. Good to see you. And just to remember Dr. Martin Luther King, I always try to pull out one of his quotes, a short quote. And today I found one, actually just in the last 5 minutes. If I cannot do great things, I can do small things in a great way. Wow.
Those are powerful words.
Yeah. Kind of what you do for all your clients.
That's right. Yeah.
All righty. So let's talk about finances. Let's talk about the TSP. The available funds for investment in the TSP, what are there, five of them now?
Well, there's 10, but five of them are very similar to one another, and then five are all unique. So probably walk you through those first. I get this question a lot because federal employees are engaged in what they do day to day. They're not necessarily focused on their retirement dollars every day, right? And that's okay. But it's really good for all of them to get educated as to what are the choices they can make to invest their retirement money.
You and I have been at this for a while, and I'd love everyone to go to a really, it's like the first one.
Yeah.
But I'm sometimes surprised that with all the great benefits and the opportunities within the thrift, there isn't a better understanding. I'm not saying anything negative here. It would be the same thing as if I went and they talked to me about what they do. I wouldn't know.
Sure. Yeah, and if there's kind of stepping back even a level further before I go into which funds to use, I mean, the number one recommendation for all listeners is if you are not contributing 5% to your TSP, please do so, right? That's I like to tell people saving for retirement that if they get a match from their employer, that is free money. There's no such thing as a free lunch in this country unless you're saving for retirement. And the fact that I can put aside 3% of my money for retirement and the government will match dollar for dollar those contributions. And then on another 2%, they'll match 50% of my contributions. That is really powerful towards getting me towards the retirement I want someday.
Plus they get an annuity.
Absolutely.
Based on years in service.
Yeah,
and highest
when I compare to other companies, just that benefit alone of the match is about where most companies stop. And now we add to that there's also this annuity. Really, I see a lot of federal retirees I work with being in better situation than many others outside of the federal government because they don't have that three-pronged approach to retirement, Social Security, the federal annuity, and the TSP.
And I found at the beginning career seminars, they're not exactly flying off the shelf
right.
Because people don't want to hear it then or don't fully appreciate it. And then, you know, late, early career, mid-career, then they start to, really, I can do that. But sometimes habits are built earlier on than what they should be.
Yeah, if I could, I mean, I talk to a lot of federal employees and I think the general age people get really engaged in this stuff is around 50. If they're over 50, I get a lot of wide eyes and strong focus when I talk. And under 50, there's some glazed looks sometimes. I think it's really important to just turn the contributions into dollars and realize that the dollars we put in today and give them time to grow, leave them in the oven is the term I use. You leave them in the oven for long enough, they turn into a lot more. And so really, for our younger listeners, that it's more important than for any really, because they are the ones that we're going to have the most time to let those amounts they save grow. for retirement.
It's true. And Joel speaks from boots on the ground knowledge. Both Joel and I, we present part of a retirement seminar package to federal governments, and it's been like 36 years. You're not 36 years old, so you came later. Anyway, this is not idle chatter, and we see, and they're a very appreciative group. And
very much
sometimes
so.
I think they don't fully understand the benefits that they have and the coordination of the benefits.
That's right. Yeah. So the number one piece before we get into investments is just to, I'll say this one more time because it's really important. The federal government will put in 1% automatically. That's for all federal employees that are enrolled in, you know, that are FERS employees. 1% automatic. And then on your first 3% of contributions, they will match dollar for dollar. So now we've got, if you put aside 3%, you have a total of 7% of your income getting put toward retirement. Now, if you're willing to do another 2%, go to 4% and then 5%. Once you're at 5%, the federal government is matching a full 5%. So now you put in 5%, but there's 10% being put aside for your retirement. Very powerful a way of saving for retirement.
And we'll get into the choices, like you say, in a bit. But I think that's a strong message that should pique the interest at this point.
Yeah. And one thing I'll say is sometimes it feels like just too much, right? Well, wow, I can't put aside 5% of my income. I've got all these expenses. Once a year, raise that by 1%. You know, wherever you're at today, let's say you're at 2% right now and you just don't feel like, well, we're at the year end. This is a perfect time to be talking. Take it up by 1% right now. You know, log into tsp.gov, up your contribution by 1%. And then next year, do the same thing, another one. And the following year, another one. And generally, if anybody listening does that starting now, 4 years from now, they're going to be putting in the full 5%. And it's not going to feel near as painful as feeling like they had to do it all at one bite.
And that's a good point, and I'm not so sure everybody gets the message. Again, I do this, you know, for a living. I might not understand what they do for a living,
sure.
But they go, well, you know, I'll wait and put the 1% later. But your method is do it now.
Do it now. 1% extra every year. Yeah, because the most powerful dollar you save for retirement is the one you save today. Next year, it's going to be a little less powerful, and the year after, a little bit less powerful than that. So people are 50, and they say, well, when should I start saving for retirement? I said, the best time is 20 years ago, but the next best time is right now.
Well, that's good.
Yeah.
And they listen?
Very much so. I think so. Well, when somebody is across the table from me, it's probably because this is on their mind, right?
Yeah, well, that's true. They wouldn't have come up to you in class or called
exactly.
you after class.
Yeah,
yeah. Yeah. What, brag on yourself a little bit. What was your best experience with regard to somebody said, I don't need to do that. I get a pension and, you know, I'm a good saver. Or no, I have too many other things that I have to pay for.
Yeah, I think. The best experiences happen when somebody is willing to be open to listening, right? This is something that's in my line of work, I very much can tell in the first 10 or 15 minutes whether this is going to work well to talk together or not. And it really has much more to do with how open they are to receiving feedback. The statement, I don't know, is a critical statement to learning. We can't learn anything unless we walk in thinking, I don't know. Tell me. Teach me. And so my best experiences happen with those who are open to listening. Today in the country, we have more than 39,000 TSP millionaires. That means people who started saving for retirement in their TSP, and it's grown to more than $1 million. And there, I will tell you, I've met them from all walks of life. These are people who saved an average amount of money, but they did it consistently year in, year out, and left it invested in a strategic allocation. We'll talk about that later.
39,000?
Yeah. TSP. This is TSP specific. I'm not talking about 401ks or 403bs.
No,
TSP.
I'm with you. I remember, it's been a while, we celebrated the first person to be a TSP millionaire.
Yeah.
It wasn't all that long ago.
No, it wasn't. Yeah.
So, got a good job, got good pennies, you got a great retirement system, mm-hmm. and you got a great saving for a retirement system.
That's right.
All righty. So, what do you find... with regards to people that you talk to in class, people come up to you after class or you meet, is there an average thing that they don't know?
Well, the number one thing they're not aware of is just how all of the investments work. All right. So there's, we start out with the five basic investments of the TSP. There's two that aren't stocks and three that are stocks. So let's talk about the two that aren't stocks first. There's the G fund, and the G fund is invested in short-term treasury securities. That means short-term loans to the U.S. government. The interesting thing about the G fund is that it cannot go down in value. Anything that is in the TSP G fund will at least remain flat and go up. Now, in my industry, we have a term, a saying, it says risk and return are related. So if you've taken something that's very low risk, it probably means it's not going to have very high return. And that's very true with the G fund. The G fund, we'd expect to earn a couple of percent a year. The G fund was most federal employees know about the G fund because up until 2015, it was the default investment in their TSP. If they didn't choose where they wanted the money to go, it went into the G. As of 2015, the L funds came involved. We'll talk about them later. So the G fund can't go down in value. It can't go up very much. And people who are saving for retirement, generally if retirement's especially 10 years away or longer, probably shouldn't have very much G fund in there because what we want is growth in our retirement portfolio. So let's go to the other non-stock investment. That's the F fund. The F fund is invested in U.S. bonds. The technical term, it's the Barclays Aggregate U.S. Bond Fund Index. That's what the it's pegged against, all right? So it's invested in the whole universe of U.S. bonds. Now, bonds are loans, again, to the government, also to companies, private companies, also to real estate groups, mortgage-backed securities. There's all kinds of loans that can be made, and loans pay interest. We like interest because interest gives us income. So people, especially in retirement, should have a pretty good-sized amount of F because the other characteristic of bonds is they add a layer of risk, but not too much. So I said risk and return are related. We're taking a little bit more risk on from F. That means it can go down in value, but also that we'd expect it to get a little bit better return. And maybe 3 to 5% return per year is what we'd think over the long term for the F fund. All right, there's going to be years it goes down, years it goes up, but that's kind of what we'd expect from the F. So that's our two options to invest inside the TSP that aren't stocks. The other three options are all stocks. Now, we have the C fund. The C fund is in big U.S. companies. The technical index that it's pegged against is the Standard & Poor's 500 or the S&P 500. When you're investing in big U.S. companies, you're really investing in what I would say is the most conservative of stocks, and it's a lot riskier than the F fund or the G, right? I would expect a large U.S. stock portfolio to deliver somewhere between 7 and 10% per year. Again, my ranges have to expand as we take more risk on, but they can go down. You know, 2008, the C fund would have been down about 40%. So now we've taken a lot of risk. Now, what are we getting in return? Well, we're getting a lot higher return, right? We're the potential for a lot more money to be earned off of those investments. And if retirement's a number of years away, I'm far more concerned about the risk of not having enough money in retirement than I am about the risk of a short-term drop in an investment. So meaningful amounts of C should be in a portfolio.
So a short-term drop, didn't we see that about 2 years ago towards the end of the year?
Yeah, the fourth quarter of 2018, so it's 6 quarters ago. It's far distant memory because everybody right now is just thinking about the fact that the C fund earned 32% in 2019. A lot of that was recovery from a big drop in the fourth quarter of 2018, where it was all down almost 20%. So that's a very good illustration of the volatility you can have in stocks and why you don't want to be taking a look at the TSP every day and making changes to your allocation based on it.
Okay, you shouldn't look at it. Well, you shouldn't look at it every day.
You shouldn't.
Yeah.
I mean, if I could tell people to only look at their investments every 6 months to a year, I'd do it. And most people don't have that patience and discipline. But especially when the markets are down, the last thing you want to be doing is opening up your TSP statement and looking at the heartburn created if you have meaningful stock allocation. But if you give it time, what happened last year is a great illustration of it. The fourth quarter, very poor performance for stocks. The first quarter of 2019, very positive performance for stocks. When stocks come out of a decline, they come up sharp and quick. And that's why you don't want to start trying to time this thing. I give you a story from a client I had who called me on Christmas Eve 2018. Now, Christmas Eve 2018, the markets were down 4% that day. There's some technical reasons why. Suffice it to say that most of the traders are on vacation at that point, right?
Right.
So these are called holiday trading days, and they're light volume. It means there's not many people trading. And when not many people are trading and somebody has a bad idea, then it can move fast. It can drop really quick. And that's what it did on that day. He called me, he said, "That's it. I can't take it anymore. I'm almost 70 years old. I got, you know," he's in a good diversified strategic allocation, but he's feeling the pressure. And I get it because his portfolio is down. And I said to him, "Don't make the worst decision in the worst possible moment. You said we decided on this portfolio allocation in calm times. That's when we decide on allocation. We're in the middle of choppy times right now." Well, what happened? I said I'd call him the day after Christmas. And the day after Christmas, the markets were up over 5%. So he was very happy he hadn't made the shift then. I said, "Do you still want to make the change?" No, I don't. I'll hold off. And over the next month, his portfolio gained over 15%. Now, I'm not saying that I knew on Christmas Eve that it was going to rise 15% in the next month. I just know that at some point in the future, it's going to have a strong rise. And the worst thing you can do to a strategic allocation is go more conservative in the middle of a down. I also wouldn't be going more aggressive in the middle of an up. So some clients are coming in to me right now saying, "Should I be putting more in stocks? I got 30% in the stocks last year, and a lot of this money isn't in stocks." We try and pick a strategic allocation that is matched up with people's goals. We don't mess with it either in the big downs or the big ups. Warren Buffett's the one who said it right. You be aggressive when others are nervous and be conservative when everyone else is greedy.
What a great way to take a break. So thanks for the wisdom, Andrew. We'll be back after the break is over.
WEPA is a proud sponsor of For Your Benefit, presented by NITP Mondays 10:05 to 11 a.m. on Federal News Radio 1500 a.m. Federal open season is over, but there's never been a better time to reevaluate your life insurance coverage. Get life insurance for less with WEPA. WEPA has been insuring the future of federal employees for more than 75 years. WEPA can be used as a supplement or replacement for your existing policy and costs up to 89% less than Fegley. In fact, last year, members who switched saved $375 on average. Although open season is over, you can apply anytime for WEPA Group Term Life Insurance. See how much you could save by visiting waepa.org today.
Welcome back to For Your Benefit. We're here today. We're talking finance, and we're talking finance and investing with Joel Kunduk, certified financial planner, fellow seminar presenter. And if you're just tuning in now, do yourself a favor and go back to the beginning. Joel laid out some very good points to look at, reactions to assess either after assessing them, maybe there shouldn't be any reaction. But anyway, where were we going to go next?
Well, we have two more investments to cover on the stock side of the TSP. So we've talked about the C fund, which is the S&P 500, big U.S. companies. Two other options. A very similar risk investment option to the C fund is the I fund. The I fund is invested in the MSCI Eurasia Index, Europe, Asia, Far East. So that means it's trying to get international companies based in developed markets like Japan, England, Germany, Australia, countries like that. That's what this investment is picking up. Now, those who are listening who keep a close eye on the TSP will say to me, "Why would you say it's a similar risk investment to the C fund? It hasn't done near as well as the C fund over the last 10 years. I'd agree with them. The problem is if you rewind to the previous decade from 2000 to 2009, the I fund significantly outperformed the C fund. And that's because we integrate different stock investment ideas for the fact that they do different things at different times. And we can never predict which one's going to be in the lead any given year. But you know, the 2000 to 2009 is sometimes referred to as the lost decade for the S&P 500. The S&P 500 averaged negative 1% per year for that whole 10-year time period. That's because you include 2001 and 2008, two very large declines. But what we see is that the I fund didn't do near as poorly. Now, that's why I recommend having some I in your portfolio. How much should you have? Well, it depends on your life situation. But I is something to have in a strategic portfolio. I would say, again, it's similar risk to the C. I was alluding to the fact that oftentimes people who are investing in the TSP try and make their decisions based on looking at historical performance. And sometimes historical performance can lead you to some poor decisions. So I'm a much bigger fan of picking a strategic allocation. You hold to it. You don't jigger around with it every time, you know, every year. I mean, here's the biggest mistake you make. You look at last year and you say, well, the C did 32, the I only did 20 or so. I got to put more in C. Well, that's called chasing performance. It's saying put more into what did well last year. And there's no indication by a lot of research, and we don't have time to go into it on this show, but a lot of research says there's no indication that what happened last year is any help on deciding what's going to happen next year. You're far better off choosing your patterns based on long-term history of these investments. So iFund has a place. Last investment is the S. S is in Sam, the S fund, or small. Think of it as small. The S fund is invested in according to an index called the Dow Jones U.S. Completion Index. The one that I hear talked about much more commonly on the TV and in the newspapers is the Russell 2000. It's not the Russell 2000, but think of it similar to that. It's a small and mid-sized U.S. company index. Now, this is the highest risk investment in the TSP. Smaller companies move even more than big companies. We said risk and return are related. This is the highest risk. What does it also mean? It's the highest potential return. If somebody said to me in a vacuum, I'm not giving advice here. If they said in a vacuum, what would I expect to be the highest return portfolio in the TSP? You'd put 100% of it in the S fund. Well, what's the problem with putting 100% of the S fund? It's that in the next market decline, when it's down 60%, you're going to abandon it. And at the worst possible moment, and do yourself much more harm in a portfolio than good. So I am a much bigger fan. To call me like a chef, I prefer having multiple ingredients and not one ingredient. I like having a mix of the five funds.
And I like that.
Thanks.
Chef?
Yeah, well, and you can either mix the ingredients yourself, or that brings us over to the other five investment choices in the TSP, which are the L funds. And the L funds, you have somebody else, the chef, prepare your meal for you, right? It comes out to you on a plate. You've got different percentages of the G, F, C, I, and S decided by a group of outside professionals that is automatically rebalanced, which is a technical term saying just bringing things back to the target percentage. You're returning it to your target percentage. Even when things move up and down and all, you know, it returns it to a strategic percentage. There's five L funds, the L2050, 2040, 2030, 2020, and income. Each of those, there's the one caveat I give to the L fund. They're the new default, which is wonderful. So anybody who joined the federal government after September of 2015, they're not automatically put in the G. They're automatically put in the L, closest to their estimated target retirement age. And the thing I like about that is that now someone who just hasn't made a decision at all is automatically being put in some S, some I, some C, some F, and some G. It's great. The question that I ask people to look at is delve deeper, look at the actual allocation inside each of those, because they get much more conservative as retirement approaches. And people have to decide whether that's the right level of conservative. So this is like checking an ingredients list, right? You want to know, hey, maybe I'm allergic to something. Could you show me what's in this, right? And if you look at, and it's very simple. If you go to Google, type L2050 allocation, you're going to get to a TSP.gov website. It's going to show you the investments that are in the L fund and how much of each there are. And you can decide whether you like that or not. So I have some people I work with who prefer to be in the L's where the chef is cooking it in, out in the kitchen, and other people who pick their allocations themselves from the five funds because they like cooking themselves.
Very, very, I like the analogies. Very good.
Thanks.
You get people come to you from referrals from other clients. You get people from the seminars and the like. I don't know that there's a common denominator. I would guess that more than half know how to save but don't know how to invest.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's the other ones that don't know how to save or invest.
Yeah. And I think they're taught admittedly poorly by our country how to do it. All right. So if anyone is decided for themselves, hey, I want to think a little bit more about investing, they're going to be inclined to go to CNBC, watch some news show, listen to some podcasts, and they're going to think what they need to listen to is voices saying, what should you do today? What's hot? You know, how should you be invested today? And they're going to listen every day because the recommendations change day in and day out. Well, what I have to say there is that those programs are created to get eyeballs and ears, right? Not to give sound retirement advice. So it's far more exciting, and we'll get a lot more people to watch and listen if they talk about what's new and different and exciting today. I've thought about going on programs like that, and I'm just not sure that they're who I want to hear, that I'm who they want to hear, because I'm pretty boring on this approach. All right. I'm giving real counterintuitive advice. Here's what I say. If people are more interested in getting into investments, all right, how many years until your goal? When we're talking about TSP, what we really mean is how many years until you think you're going to retire. You want to design a strategic allocation for yourself that matches with the number of years to the goal. If a goal is less than 5 years away, it should have a lot of bonds and a lot. So that means a lot of F and G, you'd think. And so some listeners are going to say, hey, I'm 62. I'm thinking of retiring at 65. Are you telling me I should be all in G and F fund? And I'm not. And here's why. If I'm 62 and I'm thinking of retiring at 65, the first 2 years of retirement are going to take place in the next 5 years. The rest of the years of retirement, years 3 through 30, mm-hmm. are still more than 5 years away and still need to have a meaningful stock allocation for most of us. Some people will come to me at 65. They're ready to retire. I say, how much are you looking to take out of your TSP each year? They say, nothing. I've got enough saved for retirement. I'm just using my Social Security and my annuity, and that covers me. And I said, well, hey, then we're in a situation where you can choose whatever investment allocation you want because you're not relying on this investment account for distributions. But most of us are not in that pool. Most of us are going to be drawing from a retirement portfolio. So now the question becomes, all right, how much do we leave in stocks for the long term? Now, here's what I sit down and tell people. You probably shouldn't have less than half of your portfolio in stocks for the duration of retirement if you're planning on using the money for retirement. So that means at least 50% of your portfolio probably belongs in C, I, and S. I'm talking to a wide swath of listeners right now. I'm trying to be sure I'm not giving anybody individual advice here. I'm speaking in broad brushes. When we're planning on taking money from a retirement portfolio, we need a meaningful allocation of stocks. And the way I base that on, there's been some studies done talking about, well, how much can I take out from an investment account to rely on it still being there when I'm 90? And the best research out there says that somewhere between 4 and 5% of my portfolio can be taken out on any given year, even including real big down years, that's factored into the research, and still have a reasonable expectation that the portfolio is going to be around for the next 30 years. The way they did that is they looked backwards in time, back to the 1920s, so we're including time periods like the Great Depression, and they're saying, if you had 50% in U.S. big stocks and 50% in bonds, well, that's 50% C, 50% F. If you'd had something like that, then in no past retirement scenario lasting 30 years would you have run out of money if you started taking 4% out. Now, if you're going to refine it a little bit, have some I, some S, a little bit of G in there, now we can go up to maybe that 4.5%, 5% level. So some people, you know, they're sitting there saying, hey, I got $300,000 in my TSP. I'm 60 years old. Retirement's at 65. How much can I take? Well, 4% of $300,000 would be about $12,000 a year. If you go to the upper end of things, maybe you're taking $15,000 a year. It's better to sit down with somebody to talk about your own personal situation to confirm that. But that comes to about $1,000 a month if you got $300,000 in the TSP. But the caveat to that is if you put it all in G, that's earning 1, 2% a year, all of those recommendations are off. I don't have studies that talk about what G Fund can do. But I do have studies, reasonable studies that include very significant drops in the market historically that have said, yes, you can reasonably take 4% from a portfolio, 4.5% if you'll diversify it a little bit more, and not have a reasonable risk of running out of money.
So these studies, would they parallel the rates of return within the TSP?
Yeah. The great thing about the TSP is because it uses index funds, these studies were all based off of index funds, right? And I should, the moment to explain index fund is just you're not picking the companies to invest. You're just investing in the whole basket, right? So the S&P 500, it's not saying, hey, which U.S. companies are going to do well. It's just saying, hey, buy all 500 of the biggest ones. You're going to get the average return. And, it was Jack Bogle many years ago at Vanguard who taught us average is pretty good. And that's true for individuals invest in the TSP. You invest in these averages, they do a fair job of getting your return for retirement.
Okay, so the S&P would be the stock, right?
Yeah, S&P is the C fund.
Okay, yep. And just pull it back a little bit, and the I fund is international?
It's an international developed markets. There's some debate right now about whether that's going to now include emerging markets that hasn't been settled yet. So the I fund right now is just big in international companies.
And the F fund?
The F fund is bonds. So it's U.S., all U.S. bonds. And a lot of people look at the F fund after last year and say, wow, that did great return, 8-9% from the F fund. The reason for that, interest rates dropped. So bonds are really attached to interest rates. Interest rates dropped. Well, what goes down must come up. At some point, there's probably going to be some kind of rise in interest rates. And when it does, it's going to mute the returns of the F fund. So don't start thinking you're going to get 8-9% per year from the F.
So if I had a bond fund and interest rates dropped, does the value of what I have prior to that go up?
If interest rates drop, the value of what I have goes up. Exactly. And the counter is also true. Interest rates go up, the value of what I had goes down. Not as much as stocks. Again, we're talking a lot less volatility in the F fund than there are in the CS&I.
Well, I'd love to talk to you off mic how you get that across to clients.
Very counterintuitive.
Yeah.
So what I will say is that some people are listening now and saying, well, how should I be invested? How can I make changes? There's two things you need to do if you're going to make changes to your allocation in the TSP. You need to change your contribution allocation, and you need to change your interfund transfers. Those are the two technical terms on the TSP site. So I'm going to say it one more time, because it's important. You change your contribution allocation and your interfund transfers. Now I'll explain those two. The contribution allocation is the drip into the bucket. It's the new money that you're putting in every year, all right? Lots of people will think they're changing their allocation because they just go in and change their contribution allocation. But let me remind you, it's the drip into the bucket. So you're actually making very small changes to your TSP when you make changes to what the new money is going in doing. This year, if I'm, setting aside 5%, I'm allowed to put aside up to $19,500 per year into the TSP. If I'm under 50, I'm allowed to put in $26,000 a year into the TSP. If I'm over 50, that's the catch-up. Well, if my TSP is at $300,000 and I'm only changing the thing that's the $19,000 a year, I haven't changed much. So now we have to think about the interfund transfers. That's the bucket. I said the contribution allocation is the drip into the bucket. The interfund transfers is the bucket. It's where all your money is sitting right now. When you change the interfund transfers on the TSP website, now you're making a change to all the investments that you are currently in for retirement.
This is kind of like bathwater.
Yeah, it's like bathwater. So and you, again, this is one of those things. Maybe you don't want to change all right at once. You can only make a change up to, I believe it's 2 times a month you can change now that allocation. But I really don't change that allocation more often than once every 6 months to a year. This is stuff you move slow over time. I'm deliberate. I'm kind of boring over here.
The same has been said about this side of the mic. Andrew said, both of you, as interesting you are, it's time to take a break and we'll listen to what NITP can do for the listeners.
Who do you trust when making your most important decisions? National Institute of Transition Planning has been the trusted source for federal retirement planning, serving new, mid-career, and pre-retirement federal employees for more than 30 years. NITP's subject matter experts bring more than 800 years of collective expertise on federal benefits, financial, transition, and estate planning. Visit NITPinc.com. That's NITPinc.com to sign up for their free monthly newsletter and information about free webinars.
Does planning for retirement seem like a daunting task? Is retirement years away? It will arrive sooner than you think. Prepare now to stay on track. Join the thousands of federal employees and retirees who have already attended National Institute of Transition Planning's free monthly webinars to learn more about retirement and financial planning. NITP is the national leader and trusted source for federal retirement information. Visit NITPinc.com to sign up for NITP's free monthly newsletter and webinar.
Welcome back to For Your Benefit. We're celebrating Dr. Martin Luther King's birthday today. National holiday. We're talking about financial planning with Joel Kunduk. Some really sound advice. And we have questions. We take questions during the week and then put them together for the show. So here's the first question. Can your guest explain how QE, first of all, we'll define QE in a bit, is boosting the stock market? Will the stock go into a bear market once interest goes up and the QE is stopped? I don't understand what all that means. Help me, Joel. Can your guest explain how QE is boosting the stock market?
Sure. So QE stands for quantitative easing. It's really a tool that the Federal Reserve is using to, in its quiver of arrows, right, to fight the potential of two things. The Fed has two mandates. One is to keep inflation low, and the other is to keep employment high. So think of the Fed as a group that is trying to avoid recession, right? They want a Goldilocks situation, not too hot, not too cold. If markets start growing too fast, then we start to get inflation. Inflation is bad for the labor market and for retirees as well. If, on the other hand, growth gets too slow, now people can't get hired, right? So the Fed, there's a lot of argument about whether the Fed has taken the right approach, the wrong approach. I'm not going to comment on that here. But what I will comment on is the fact that the Fed and government policy have an impact on the stock market. The far larger effect on the stock market is what is happening to companies, right? There's not the companies of our country and other countries around the world are not led by people who wake up and focus all day on what is the government doing. They wake up every morning saying, how can I make a product that is more desirable to a consumer, that people will want to purchase it? And what we're seeing today is that companies are profitable. Companies are doing a good job making money. When they do that, they're growing, they're able to hire more people, and markets do well. Over time, the question of whether quantitative easing is happening or not, is it boosting the stock market up? When it's taken away, will it go away? I'm going to put that in the list of the many worries that affect stock investors every day. And there's an old saying that says the stock market climbs a wall of worry. If you look back at any year throughout history, there have been always things that give us anxiety, cause us to be concerned, will stocks continue to go up? You know, if I remember a little over 10 years ago, and people may not even remember this now, but there was talk about peak oil theory, that we were running out of oil. We almost peaked. Prices are going to go through the roof. Companies aren't going to make any money anymore. You won't be able to ship anything to people anymore. And markets are going to take a huge dive. Nobody's thinking about that today. It was massive headlines. The price of oil was every day on CNBC flashing in big red numbers or green numbers. Think back to other time periods where obviously we have the September 11th terrorist attacks. We have the Asian flu of the late 90s. We have going farther back, we have the oil crisis of the 70s, the Vietnam War, Korean War, World War II. You know, back to the 1920s, we have the Great Depression.
the markets have always climbed a wall of worry. So I would say yes, when as the Federal Reserve takes its foot off the gas pedal, which you, that's what quantitative easing is. It's kind of adding a little extra oomph into the markets. That would slow down a stock market's growth or could lead to a market drop. The thing I'd say to our listeners is that is less relevant towards saving for retirement than how much you're choosing to put aside in retirement. How much are you funding and how much are you planning on spending in retirement? Have you matched what you're planning on spending in with retirement with what your resources are? Have you sat down and made sure you know what your annuity is going to pay you, what you're going to receive in Social Security, and what you can reasonably take from your TSP? And this really centers on something important in investing. You focus on what's in your control, not what's outside your control. Give markets time. We have reasonable expectations they're going to do what they do. And I do have people in seminars who will say to me, yeah, but what about if this all falls apart? What about if the economic system collapses? And I'm not one of those Pollyannas that says that's never going to happen. Okay, is there a possibility that's going to happen? Yes. Would I put that possibility at very low probability? Yes, very low probability. And here's the problem with that line of thinking. I can't design an investment allocation off of panic as a strategy. I can't do it. There's no investment inside of the TSP that you can use to really capitalize on the idea of the economic market falling apart. And somebody will say, well, what about G Fund? If everything falls apart, how are we going to take the money out from G Fund, and how are we going to have enough money to buy the things that we want to be able to buy if we get hyperinflation or something like that? So I much rather that people hit it down. If you're a golfer, hit it down the fairway, right? Slow and steady. You know, don't take out the driver and swing for the fences. Take slow and steady down the middle of the fairway is going to get you the hole faster. And what I'd focus on, rather than the catastrophes of what can go wrong, and maybe, look, somebody makes a change their allocation today, 12 months from now, the market is down. They feel like, oh, no, what have I done? You're not investing for 1 year from now. You're investing for 5, 10, 15, 20 years from now. And that's why you don't change the allocation in the basket every day. You hold to it. You leave it in the oven. You give it the time that it needs. And lo and behold, when you get to retirement, you got enough.
Great. The next question takes a cue from what you just said. Is the F fund doing well due to low interest rate environment?
Yeah, and the answer to that is yes, absolutely. Interest rates went lower. Nobody thought they could go lower, and they did. And so, yeah, F had a great year last year. No way of knowing whether next year we're going to have rising interest rates and turn that all around.
Well, these questions are as if this person was listening to you before before you came on air.
Yeah.
Has the L2020 fund been updated? And do you believe the L income fund should have more stocks?
So this is an interesting question. I will say I work with a lot of people in a number of different retirement plans. The TSP is not the only retirement plan I'm familiar with. And target date funds in general have become a much more common tool for retirement. What's a target date fund? It's what the L is doing. It's automatically choosing someone's retirement date and picking an allocation to coincide with that retirement date. Now, the interesting thing about the L funds relative to most target date funds that I work with is they're more conservative. So the L income fund has less than 30% invested in stocks, where sometimes I'll work with someone at another institution. Maybe they have like an American Funds target date fund or a Vanguard target date fund. And a similar retirement age might have 50 or 60% in stocks. None of that's right or wrong. It's just educate yourself of knowing what the ingredients are in your dish, right? And the dish here is our TSP allocation. If you think that you want to be in an L fund, make sure that you look under the hood on the L fund and know what the actual allocation is, and then make sure that allocation matches up with your goals. Someone who's in the L income fund, less than 30% in stocks, I would say they're going to need to look carefully about how much they need to take from their portfolio in retirement. If they're wanting to take 4 to 5% per year from their portfolio in retirement, I'd really want them to sit down with somebody to make sure that level of low stock risk is getting them to the destination they want.
Your comments generate more questions. These questions came in advance. These are all on the same road. I'm retired and I will be taking money from my TSP come January 2021. How far in advance do I need to file my notarized paperwork? Any talk of eliminating notarized paperwork? And does the TSP take out taxes based on one's tax rate?
Oh,
I can do that
there.
One. No.
There's a lot there. All right. So, if you're thinking of retiring January 2021, you want to be in communication with your HR. All right. You want to be talking with your department and making sure that you know all of the steps. I would say 90 days before retirement is a good time to make sure that's happening. Now, you should not expect for this all to move really fast. It can move slow, especially people who are retiring. I had a federal retiree I was working with at the end of the year, and they didn't have enough for all of the people who were looking at retiring in January, and his paperwork was delayed. So there is paperwork related to retirement. He's referring to notarized paperwork. What does that mean? Well, here's the thing. TSP is a qualified retirement plan, and if you're married, your spouse has rights by law to anything that's in a retirement plan. So any major change you're looking at doing to a retirement plan, like taking all the funds out and moving it to an IRA, for example, they need to approve on that. And not only do they need to sign it, they need to have it signed and notarized. So with September of 2019, a number of changes were made to TSP. They were good changes. If you have detailed questions about what those changes were, Google's our friend again here. You can go to TSP changes, September 2019, and the TSP has created a great fact sheet going through all those details.
It's very good.
It's really good. Yeah, yeah. But one of the changes made was that a lot of things can now at least be started online. So you can start your distribution request on TSP.gov. But don't expect that you can make the entire distribution using the online tool, because there's probably going to be notarized paperwork. Now, the question, would there be eliminating notarized paperwork? That probably involves more of changes to law than changes to the administration of the TSP, because spouses have rights and retirement plans want to make sure that the absolute sure that the spouse has signed off on any changes that are made. If you're not married, don't think about that step. I mean, notarized paperwork is not required for the employee. It's required for the spouse of the employee. Now, then the question, does the TSP take out the taxes based on one's tax rate? It does not. You have choices to make with regards to taxes. And hey, when you were figuring out filing a W-4 when you worked and it took a little while to get the right taxes down, think of the same thing happening in retirement, because now you got Social Security coming to you with the potential for tax withholdings, the annuity coming to you with the potential for tax withholdings, and the TSP coming to you with potential for tax withholdings. You got to get all of those right. So it's good to work with a qualified tax advisor and to plan on that taking a year or so to get all of the withholdings right, so that you still have the right amount being taken out for taxes.
Okay, let's do this one quick, but it plays to what you've been, again, these questions were asked well before we ever hit the air. In a low interest rate environment, isn't the F fund a better option than the G?
Okay.
That's a tough one, huh?
I like this as a summary question, hearkening back to the very beginning when we were talking about the investments of the TSP, all right? The G fund is an investment that doesn't go down in value. I don't mind having some G in a portfolio, and I'll tell you why. When markets drop, you're happy to have things that aren't dropping along with it when stocks are going down. So money that I have in G and F is money that I can use to withdraw when stocks are temporarily down and give the stocks the break they need to kind of have some time to recover. Think of it that way. Do I want some G? Yes, I do. Do I want more in F? Yes, I do, because F has the potential for higher returns, even though it can go down in value. So I probably have more F than G in general, but it takes sitting down and talking through somebody's specific situation to be sure.
And the ones that maybe you've talked to over the years, and they didn't want to do it, but they did it, and there was a rough patch, did they call you up and say thanks?
Absolutely. And that's one of the most gratifying things about what I do. Look, most people, and this is unfortunate about my profession, most people want to sit down and give you advice from moment one. They want to talk to you about what you ought to do and what they're thinking about and what's exciting. It's the same thing with these programs on TV. Jim Cramer, you know, with the Mad Money and the rolled up sleeves and the horns. That's the exciting stuff. But the better path is always to be focused on your goals. No one should recommend an investment allocation to you until they understand what your goals are. Where are you trying to get to? Right. And once they know where you're trying to get to, then you can pick an investment allocation that matches it. And when I've sat down with people 15 years later after deciding on allocation and now they're ready to retire and they see a good deal more than if they'd been guessing each year what was going to be hot, moving things around, you know, I really gratifying.
Okay. Now, we are all gratified or listening to you. But we have less than 2 minutes, Andrew tells us. So final thoughts?
Yeah, I think of the TSP as a great vehicle for getting you to your financial future. If you haven't put enough into it, start. If you're putting in 3%, put in 4%. If you're putting in 4%, put in 5%. And making sure that you're putting aside money for a rainy day does two wonderful things. One, it makes sure you're going to have more saved for retirement in the future. Two, it encourages you to live off a little bit less right now, which is another practice that's going to lead you to a happier retirement. You can live on less.
Let me ask you this about that. For those that you talk to, they want to do right, they just can't do right, but then they take the first step to righting the ship, if you will. And then do they take a second step?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think that's the one thing wonderful about us as human beings is we are creatures of habit. If we can form good habits, we stick with them. And so, yeah, I've had people who started putting in 1% the current year, they put in 2% the following year, they send me email later, they're up to 5%, and they never thought they would have been able to do it.
So all the listeners should call their friends and say, listen to this show when it goes up on the net.
Absolutely. Listen to the rebroadcast and, yeah, and have them reach out if they've got questions.
Okay, Joel, another great time. Andrew, thanks for keeping it on track, and we'll be back next week. Have a pleasant one.
Thanks, Bob.
Bye-bye.
You've been listening to For Your Benefit, presented by NITP and sponsored by WEPA. Please tune in next Monday at 10 a.m. for a topic solely devoted to you, the federal employee. This show can also be heard on demand at federalnewsradio.com. Search For Your Benefit. Thanks for listening.